the headlines. Iran says it will continue talks with the nuclear deal parties for as long as necessary, but won't rush to meet artificial deadlines by sacrificing the rights of its people. The Yemeni army downs a Saudi reconnaissance drone in an area straddling the provinces of Saada and Amran. Also, South Korea is for now shelving plans to ease COVID restrictions amid a sharp rise in cases and fears over the emergence of Omicron. Our top story, Iran says it's ready to continue negotiations with the remaining signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal for as long as necessary. As the third day of the new round of negotiations is about to start in Vienna, a senior official tells Press TV that Tehran will not rush into artificial deadlines and timetables at the expense of the legitimate rights and demands of the Iranian nation. The official says Iran has come to Vienna with clear demands and proposals. The Iranian delegation is currently in the Austrian capital to resume talks with P4 plus one countries after a six-month pause. Tehran insists that the removal of all post-2015 sanctions in a verifiable manner should be a priority of the talks. To reassure that, a working group of experts convened to discuss the removal of sanctions on Tuesday. We're now joined by Toma Lesky, who's with us from the Austrian capital of Vienna. Homa, welcome to the program. It's day three of talks. Some of the developments that have come out are that most likely the European signatories, they want to rush the negotiations to a quick conclusion. Talk to us more about the comments coming from the Iranian side, and why are the three countries trying to rush this thing?
Yes, Basio, I'm just standing outside the Hotel Palais Faubourg, where the negotiations are taking place. We had the Joint Commission session, as you say, they're held here 3 days ago, opening the seventh round of the negotiations aimed at reviving the nuclear agreement. The United States delegation also in Vienna and indirectly involved in these talks. But as the working groups here have begun their work, both the working group that started its work yesterday on sanctions removal at the expert level and today the working group on nuclear measures that need to be taken by Iran to go back to full compliance, starting their work today at the expert level. The political directors are also involved in intense diplomatic activity. We just saw about half an hour or so ago Mr. Barghari, the head of Iran's delegation, entering the Cobalt Hotel. We're assuming that he has another meeting probably with the EU coordinator Enrico Mora. He met him yesterday as well. So a lot of activity taking place here behind closed doors, of course. We still don't know when the next Joint Commission meeting will take place, wrapping up this seventh round of talks, because none of the sides have made any statements about when this round is going to finish. You said that the Iranians have made it clear that they will continue these talks or stay as long as needed, and as long as they believe that these negotiations are going to be useful or bear any fruit. Now, this just, I think, suggests the fact that the Iranian team here, led by Mr. Barghari Tani, are quite steadfast in their approach, saying that they're not going to back down from the demands that they've made clear, which includes, they say, the removal of all post-2015 sanctions. So these are sanctions that were reimposed after the Trump administration withdrew from the deal, and also these are sanctions that were imposed additionally under various other labels by the Trump administration. So they're saying that if you want Iran to go to the levels of its activities, the levels that it had in 2015, then you also have to go back to that year. So we want all of those sanctions, each sanction that's been imposed additionally after 2015 and after the withdrawal, to be removed. And we want it to be removed in a verifiable manner, meaning that it shouldn't be just an interim removal or a temporary lifting. It should be removed fully and immediately and verifiably. And we also, they say, want guarantees that there won't be any further violations by the US once the JCPOA is back in place. They will not withdraw again. They will not introduce new sanctions or decide to reimpose previous sanctions. And when you look at this, on the face of it, when you look at this, these are demands that might lead a lot of political commentators to assume that there isn't much hope for the success of these talks, that it seems unlikely the U.S., according to what its own officials have said in the previous round, they believe it might be unlikely for any agreement to be reached. But at the same time, other political observers that we've been talking to are of the opinion, the fact that the Iranian delegation has come here with this tough approach and unyielding approach, this could actually basically persuade the other side, the Europeans and the Americans, to understand that this is the position that the new Iranian team has. It's not going to back down. And political commentators have been telling me they believe this will lead the Americans to make a decision. Are they going to have, will they express this political will and make this decision to, if they really want to save the agreement, if they really want the current situation to be saved, will they take the action that's required of them? And if not, then, and if Iran reaches the conclusion that these talks are not going anywhere and it's not getting what it wants, then they'll simply collapse. Then these talks will collapse and there will be no JCPOA. Iran will continue making advances in its nuclear program. So we'll see if this is what's going to happen, if there's going to be success. Some are suggesting that these talks may be drawn out for a long time yet. These negotiations may continue for days. We have to see what they come up with after these meetings are over.
All right, thanks a lot, Homa Lezgi, joining us from the Austrian capital, Vienna. Hopefully we'll be hearing from you later on in the day as well. A high-ranking Iranian economic delegation has concluded a two-day visit to Syria after meeting top officials in the Arab country and holding discussions for boosting economic relations. Our correspondent Mohammed Ali has the details. It's a report from Damascus.
Iranian Minister of Industry, Mine and Trade has concluded a two-day visit to Syria. He toured on Tuesday a number of factories in Adra Industrial Zone, as well as the joint Syrian-Iranian company for manufacturing cars, which has been inactive since 2019 due to obstacles in providing foreign currencies for payments as a result of the war and sanctions.
We are working to develop economic ties between both countries and revive Syrian industry. We propose to the Syrian government that we can import car parts into Syria and in exchange we export fully manufactured cars outside. Thus, in this case, there will be no pressure on the Syrian economy related to foreign currency. Syrian officials said the central bank will study our proposal.
The Iranian minister held a meeting with Syria's Prime Minister Hussein Arnous. Talks focused on implementing joint projects on time and removing obstacles facing them.
We discussed with the Prime Minister many economic proposals and reviewed the capabilities of both countries. There are some obstacles in transporting goods between Iran and Syria, as well as money transfer due to measures taken by Syria to control foreign currencies exchange rates. But with the cooperation between central banks of both states, we can reach a solution.
Meanwhile, Fatemi Amin and his accompanying delegation held talks with Syria's ministers of industry and domestic trade. Besides exchange of goods, officials discussed establishing investments that would increase domestic production in Syria, thus create job opportunities and help the war-torn country enhance its economy. The Iranian official also inaugurated the first Iranian trade center in Damascus, which hosts a large number of companies specialized in trade, economy, industry, and reconstruction. The center serves import and export operations, as well as marketing between both states.
Officials agreed to form work teams to follow up trade cooperation and agreements reached during the two-day talks. The overall understanding is to increase the level of economic ties to match political and strategic ones between Syria and Iran. Mohammed Ali from the Prime Minister's office, Damascus.
The Yemeni army says it has shot down a Saudi spy drone in the country's northwest. Our correspondent in Sana'a tells us more about what happened. Let's take a listen.
The Yemeni army managed to take another CH-4, which is a Chinese-made drone was hovering over Al-Amshir district, which is located between two provinces in the north in Yemen, between Amran and Sa'da. The drone was absolutely making hostile actions against the Yemeni people. So the Yemeni army managed to take down the CH-4 drone. The Yemen's armed forces have earlier shot down a huge number of these Chinese drones that are being used by the Saudi Air Force. The Yemeni army says that it will continue shutting down these drones as long as they keep hovering over the Yemeni territories.
Elsewhere, a Palestinian woman finally walks free after spending 7 years in an Israeli jail. Amal Taqatra, 30, is the longest-serving Palestinian female prisoner and a resident of Bethlehem. She was set free from Damon prison on Tuesday. After her release, Taqatra invited Palestinians to unite and confront the Israeli regime and its violation of their rights. She says women prisoners are suffering daily because of deliberate medical negligence. Taqatra was arrested in 2014 after being shot 5 times by Israeli forces. She was accused of attempting to stab an Israeli settler south of the occupied West Bank. She's still suffering from major health problems. And the dispute over general elections in Iraq is dragging on. An umbrella organization for Iraqi resistance groups is still refusing to concede the results. The Coordination Committee of the Iraqi Shia Group says the results were fabricated well in advance and in total disregard of the people's demand. The committee says, despite enough evidence, the Election Commission failed to deal with the complaints in compliance with the law. It wants the federal court to annul the results. On Tuesday, the Electoral Commission reconfirmed the political bloc led by Murtada al-Sadr as the winner of October's parliamentary elections following weeks of recounting. The federal court now needs to approve the final results. Last month, the Fatah Alliance and several political groups opposed the vote outcome. That sparked widespread protests with people demanding a recount and fresh voting. COVID making a comeback in South Korea. Authorities there say the number of daily infections is now at a record high, more than 5,000 daily cases in just one day. Not only a record high, but also a huge number for a country praised for its success in containing the pandemic. The rise in cases and fears over the emergence of the new variant have prompted officials to stop easing restrictions. They've called on those with mild infections to treat themselves at home, and those with severe cases to be transferred to hospital. This is because a majority of ICU beds are filled up. Nearly 80% of South Korea's population is now fully vaccinated, a reason for the low mortality rate in the East Asian country. Listen to our Seoul correspondent Frank Smith explain what authorities in South Korea are doing to try and stem the rise in cases.
I spoke with a health official at Yonsei Hospital here in South Korea, and he talked about the need to secure more beds and perhaps consider another lockdown. Health authorities really slammed the government today in various media outlets for their decision to try to move patients into more home care, and they suggested that patients of COVID-19 needed to be more closely monitored, and that couldn't be done, you know, on the phone. And they argued that, you know, there needs to be a more serious consideration of social distancing restrictions being reimposed here in South Korea.
The discovery of the newest COVID variant has prompted some governments to restrict travel from Southern Africa, but the World Health Organization now warns that those travel bans will not stop Omicron from spreading. According to the organization, the restrictions may discourage countries from sharing their findings about the virus. WHO chief believes a common coordinated global response is needed to deal with the situation. He wants nations to take rational and proportional measures to reduce risks. There's a now growing uncertainty about the travel bans because the Netherlands has revealed that Omicron was in fact present in the country a week before it was discovered in South Africa. Scientists say the new variant has a high number of mutations that might make it more transmissible or resistant to vaccines.
Last Thursday, South Africa reported cases diagnosed with a heavily mutated variant of the novel coronavirus, later named Omicron. On Monday, the World Health Organization said the new variant is expected to raise the number of infections worldwide, warning that any spike in cases could have huge consequences.
Omicron's very emergence is another reminder that although many of us might think we're done with COVID-19, it's not done with us. We're living through a cycle of panic and neglect. Hard-won gains could vanish in an instant. Our most immediate task, therefore, is to end this pandemic.
The United Nations health body says more studies need to be run to establish the new strain's feared resistance to vaccines and previous infections.
Well, I think that the scare value, as time goes on, of talking about these new variants of concern falls. Now, they say in markets that you buy the rumor and you sell on the fact. Well, there's quite a few rumors circulating about this virus, but the facts that are known are very little.
Several countries scrambled to ban flights from South Africa and a number of other African countries affected by the new variant, stranding thousands of passengers there. The travel bans have drawn the ire of South Africa, with President Cyril Ramaphosa saying such moves will only cause more damage to his people.
At the same time, we need to resist unjustified as well as unscientific travel restrictions that only serve to further disadvantage developing economies.
Ramaphosa also stressed that developing countries, including those in Africa, need to manufacture their own vaccines. He called on the World Trade Organization to facilitate Africa's access to medical care.
The recent hateful comments by a Republican U.S. lawmaker against a Muslim colleague sparked controversy, with Democrat members of Congress demanding an outright condemnation of Islamophobia. Democrats say the Republican leaders need to discipline Colorado lawmaker Lauren Boebert for insinuating that a Muslim lawmaker was a threat while riding in a Capitol elevator with Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar, who is a Muslim. Boebert suggested that she could be a suicide bomber. Omar has reacted, saying that she's even received death threats before because of similar Islamophobic comments by Republicans. She urged the punishment of hateful actions that target Muslim Americans. So far, the Republican lawmakers have been mostly silent. The Democrats say they're going to draft their own punitive measures if Republicans don't take action. That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
falls off.
For millennia, Iranian scholars have actively contributed to advancing knowledge in science and technology. And today, Iran is part of the fast pace at which technological innovation is developing using knowledge-based research. Energy-efficient light bulbs or COVID-19 testing kits are just some of the knowledge-based products that you might be familiar with. Iranian knowledge-based companies have brought many social and economic advantages for people and generating billions of dollars in revenues from its product.
Oh, hello. Welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly show that looks at profits, markets, industries, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. Today's program will focus on how advanced technologies are created. We wanted to see how an idea can be transformed into a marketable, specialized product and how we'll uncover how they have contributed to the economy. Enough said. Let's walk through today's Bazaar.
Our journey began at a company that works closely with the Islamic Azad University of Iran. Virajin Akam was first established in 2008 and specializes in making technology for analyzing genes and viruses. Its main products are panel H kits and devices used in medical laboratories. Currently, it has commercialized two of its products for virus detection tests. As part of its vision for the future, this knowledge-based company is looking to expand its product list to include molecular analysis kits for cancer cells. The production unit incorporates the latest technology while including the highest quality of raw material. This company uses in-depth scientific research and know-how, which is carried out by expert staff to manufacture its high-tech products. It has received its production licenses from the Ministry of Health and Medical Education and obtained international standardization certifications too. This means its products, while matching national standards, also adhere to international regulations, allowing them to easily compete in global markets. This company produces 20 different types of kits and a variety of diagnostic kits as well. The production facilities are capable of producing thousands of testing kits per week. There are numerous opportunities for investment in such a company, particularly as it is already standing on the threshold of exporting its products.
As you might know, medical testing kits are very sensitive items which need to be dependable and accurate. Their continuous accuracy is the most important aspect of their use. A lot of science and research goes into making these products, which are the tools doctors use to help patients. For this reason, quality assurance is key in being able to market these items.
The heart of this company is its highly equipped quality control division. Here, all products are tested for performance and accuracy in each stage of production. This includes testing the raw material used to make these kits. This department is essential for maintaining quality and manufacturing items with zero failure rates. But that's not all. The quality control unit is also home to the research and development department. One of the activities at this department is to reverse engineer certain items, such as kits used for the study of genetics, which are currently imported. One of the competitive advantages of this company is that it manufactures medical devices that were previously imported. Indigenizing these items has saved the medical sector millions of dollars from capital flight. Another advantage of this knowledge-based company is its link to the Islamic Azad University's Technology Development Center, meaning the research and development division of this company is able to directly benefit from scientific advancements and services provided by the academic institution. This company has faced numerous challenges over the years, but its trump card has always been its uniquely progressive approach to development. The US sanctions have marginally impacted businesses in this field by hampering international money transfers. This knowledge-based company views the sanctions as an opportunity to strengthen productions, filling the market void while reducing the country's dependence on imports.
Research driven by scientific inquiry plays a significant role in product development. At its core, advanced technology is created by adding valuable features to items that have specialized uses. Academic and research institutions are the bridge between ideas and marketable products. And several universities across Iran are providing services to help support knowledge-based startups.
The company we discussed earlier is an example of a knowledge-based company that was born from the support of a growth program at the Islamic Azad University. The program is called Roshd Center, and its main activity is to incubate startups and entrepreneurship. The center is a platform that supports the creation and developments of new businesses in the field of advanced technology development as they start up. It provides services to entrepreneurial teams to successfully implement their ideas and help them compete in national and global markets. These services include offering workspace facilities and managerial, technical, and legal consultations. Usually, startups are incubated at this center for around 3 to 5 years. These centers serve as a type of technical infrastructure and offer a framework for sustainable business growth. The incubators also pursue broader goals, such as regional economic growth, and diversify the economy and investors. It also provides assistance to women and society's minorities in their entrepreneurial endeavors. The advantage of a university incubator is its upfront link to live research and the most recent discoveries. It is a place where scientific advancement directly meets technology development. Azad universities have some 400 campuses nationwide and hundreds of thousands of students enrolling annually. Each campus is equipped with a Roshd Center. For example, the North Tehran unit has 22 projects currently incubating.
But universities aren't the only place where incubators are found. Science and technology parks are also another area that offer similar services to knowledge-based startup and technology-developing businesses. Many of their products are presently streamlined into the market and are also exported to destination markets abroad.
Tech parks are another place where advanced technology is developed for various industries. Based on figures from the Ministry of Research, Science and Technology, there are 42 tech parks and 186 incubators spread across the country. The number of knowledge-based companies has steadily increased over the years. If there were 50 high-tech firms in 2013, now there are 125 times more than that number in 2021. Right now, there are over 6,200 high-tech firms and knowledge-based companies nationwide. Many of these businesses are active in the field of information and communication technology, machinery equipment, and electronic products. Plus, a large number of the companies are actively producing medical devices and pharmaceuticals. Last year, tech and knowledge-based firms raked in over $5 billion in internal revenues. That's according to statistics from Iran's National Innovation Fund. The Science and Technology Office of the Vice Presidency estimates exports of these products will generate $1 billion in foreign revenues by the end of the year. High technology is a product of advancements in national academic and scientific research. And nearly 70,000 academic articles were published in 2020 alone to show for it. Data from the International Web of Science shows Iran was globally ranked as 16th in 2019 for its citation work. All things considered, Iran's tech ecosystem is flourishing. Several industries have benefited from indigenized technology that has facilitated big advancements productions.
Okay, it's time for me to take a short break and pass the action over to my good friend and colleague out there on the field. So, take it away.
A general classification divides enterprises into two distinct categories. The first is labor-intensive enterprises, and the second is knowledge-intensive enterprises. I'm sure that you're familiar with the former, but the latter is primarily concerned with problem-solving, research and development, creativity, and it heavily relies on intellectual skills. Where I'm standing right now is a hub for knowledge-intensive enterprises in Iran. Pardis Technology Park is home to more than 270 companies, including SMEs, small and medium-sized startups, and large companies. Some of them have already introduced valuable and essential products to the market, whereas the others are still in their burgeoning phases and are clawing their way up. And this place acts as an incubator for them. This tech park is one of the largest of its kind in the region, and was built in an effort to reduce the cost of importing knowledge and provide professional support for creativity and innovation. And I'm going to tell you this, the result has been phenomenal. In this week's feature program, we're going to learn more about Pardis Technology Park.
Pardis Technology Park is located in an area measuring almost 60 hectares, which is expandable to 1,000 hectares, and is situated 20 kilometers northeast of Tehran. It's under the auspices of the Vice Presidency for Science and Technology and a 14-entity board of trustees comprising of corporate and real bodies from ministries, science centres and academies, headed by the first Vice President of the country. Its objectives are many-fold, but they are all directed towards the growth and development of the economy of Iran. It's set to commercialise the research results and establish sustainable ties between universities and industries, creating synergy between private and state sectors, just to name a few.
When a group of people come to each other and meet each other and make a team, so they need some ambient to help them to grow. At the same time, they need some mentors, some financial aids, and so many things. They need to be a kind of environment to help them to grow. That's why this building and this park is also called a kind of growing system, growing ecosystem for them.
PTP is considered the most pioneering and advanced and largest technology park in Iran, and it's well distinguished by many reputed foreign and domestic organizations. The technology park has great potentials to turn into a major center for economic, research and scientific activities. It also meets the requirements for linking to actual and potential global markets, and its wide-ranging activities have so far been successful.
This park is not limited to knowledge-intensive companies, but also houses and assists technology companies by definition. There are different buildings here, and in order to construct new buildings, some certain standards have to be met. There's a board of architectural design that observes and makes sure that each building has unique and creative architectural elements. This is done to make the park visually attractive. Different events are held annually at this place, during which new ideas that are worthy of being marketed, new findings of the research done by the companies that are based in this place, and also new products are presented.
Over the past months, with the upsurge in the number of infections and fatalities caused by the coronavirus, PTP has found a new agenda, combating and containing COVID-19, and according to the head of the Pardis Science and Technology Park, it has actually been very active on this new front by utilizing scientists' capabilities from all over the world.
We are manufacturing the anesthesia machine with ventilator, which has been created after 7 years of R&D in our company, and it's about 2 years we have provided this unit to the medical centers. This unit used to be imported from abroad, and by having our production in the medical centers, the hospitals, of course, we are fully providing this product and no need to import anymore.
I, for one, was amazed to learn how wide the scale of scientific and technological achievements of the park have been so far, and couldn't help but take pride in Iran's technological prowess. Let's meet another pioneer.
Yeah, this is called the knowledge-based company because we created a company called Ziz Takhmir. which is a pioneer in probiotic industry in Iran. We make the initial effort around 20 years back in the University of Tehran. We established an R&D base facility there, and after 5 years, we managed to establish a company and started to produce supplements, probiotic supplements, which were very new at that time.
Companies and their research and development centers should subscribe to one of the areas specified and supported by the park. These include, but are not limited to, telecommunication, biotechnology, nanotechnology, pharmaceutical materials, and more. Last year, according to reports, this park exported 50 of its products to 22 countries, and its export value amounted to 27 million euros. And so, Paradis Technology Park proved itself as an important asset to the country's economic apparatus to help it fight the deleterious effects of draconian sanctions imposed on Iran.
PTP has its own rather unique way to acknowledge the contribution of international scientists who at some point have added something to the park, and that is sculpting their busts. These sculptures, which are spread across the park, give it a museum-like touch, and of course for visitors, it's both informative and entertaining. PTP appears to have been an interesting technology hub for people outside of Iran too. Many ambassadors, politicians, ministers, and scientific figures have visited PTP so far.
What you saw in this report was only a small part of the first phase of this large complex, which is called Innovation Paradise. There are going to be some other parts added to this large complex. The second phase is called Health Paradise, and the third phase is called Entrepreneurship Paradise. According to the expansion plan of the park, the complex will eventually measure up to 1,000 hectares, and that will make it the most important technology zone in West Asia. The contribution of these hubs to the overall economic growth of the country is an indicative of their importance in identifying and presenting the country's technological capabilities and, of course, in accelerating its growth. And maybe this large plane over there is a symbol of that. I've been Omid Roshandel, and I will see you next time.
Well, that covers our program for today. Take care, everyone. I'm Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillahi ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at human rights from the scope and the perspective of the commander of the faithful, Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali alayhi salamullah. After Amir al-Mu'mineen defined the rights of marriage, the rights of a wife, the right of a husband, and obviously we spoke about it in brief because talking about it in detail will take us to a different topic. Then Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi talks about the right of the family, that it needs to be protected and needs to be safe. It needs to be a one unit, because if that is protected, then the community, the society itself will be protected. And this has to be obviously within the limitations of human rights. We can't just leave it to itself. So the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, even when he looks at this constitution, he lays the foundation and the rules that need to be applied for the maintenance and the protection of this family. For example, the Prophet says, "Inna rajul la yuktabu jabbaran." A husband will be written as a tyrant, obviously, in the sight of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. "Wama yamlik illa ahl bayt." And he owns and he has nothing except his household, his wife and his kids. From here we understand that being a tyrant is when you deprive people of their rights. the natural God-given rights. And usually in a household, the husband or the male, since he's being in control of the family, if he mistreats his kids, if he mistreats his wife, then obviously he is considered to be a tyrant, because that's just a tyrant on a smaller scale. If such a person, you give him two families, three families, he'll be more tyrant. You make him a mayor of a city, he'll become a tyrant. You make him a president of a country, he'll be a tyrant. You make him a king, and he'll be a tyrant. So it does not change. So from here, the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, they drew the line in trying to protect the family itself. And even Amir al-Mu'mineen, when he used to talk to people themselves, you know, the household members, be it the males, for example, he says, "La yajhufu bil ayal." A person who is in control, a person who is dominant in the house, should not deal with his family in such a dry manner that there is no love, there is no compassion, there is no mercy, there is no leniency. He says such a person, as the Prophet says, is in fact a tyrant. Then Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he goes and he advises people. He says, "La yakun ahluka ashqa al-khalqi bik." Don't make your family the most you are the most hated to them. You do so much bad towards them that they despise you. So when Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about these things, he's trying to merely highlight the fact that as a husband, you need to protect this family. That's just a right for the family. That's their right for them to be protected, not to be destroyed or abused by you. Now, let's leave it here and we continue right after the break.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. Now, Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he talks about the rights of a family, the right for the family to be protected. And first and foremost, he directs his talk and his advices and his instructions to the members of the family themselves. So he wants the father or the mother, whoever is in control, to deal with the subjects of the family, be it kids, be it the wife, be it the husband, regardless, as long as we are in the frame of a family, they need to be dealt with in a just manner. Then Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi says, when he looks at the husband, for example, and he looks at him and he tries to indicate that the father, for example, he is, as we say, Rabbul Isra, the Lord of the family. So he gives the title Rabb, the one that sustains and maintains the affairs of his subjects. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the Rabb on the bigger scale. Me and you are the Rabb on a minor scale. I have few people to look after, so I need to deal with them justly. Then Amir ibn Salamullah alayhi, he says that the one who takes care of his family, in fact, he is not only the protector, but he's also the servant of them. You need to serve them. That's my job. That's my duty. And sometimes when we say, well, okay, I don't want to be a servant for a family, we might think this is a shortcoming. That's something not good, something not nice. Where in fact, is on the contrary. So he says, لَا يَنْقُصُ الرَّجُلُ مِنْ كَمَالِهِ مَا حَمِلَ مِنْ شَيْءٍ إِلَىٰ عِيَالِهِ. It does not take away from the honor and the pride and the perfection of a person from him if he brings something to his family, if he does something to his family. Because Back then, and actually even still now, some men have the pride, they have too much pride to even, for example, carry a watermelon or carry bags of fruits to their family in the, you know, in case they might be seen by others, and they, that's a form of being degraded. So instead he would send someone else, or he would send his young children to do the chores for him, because he does not want to hurt his pride. Sadly, that happens back in the day, and even still happens now in some societies, and specifically some Islamic countries, where a man has too much pride to do anything for his family. So the Imam here is trying to educate such people. He says, you doing such a thing for your family, bringing them something, caring for them, in fact, that does not take from your perfection. That does not take from your pride. It does not take from your honor. In fact, it increases your perfection. It increases your honor. It makes you highly regarded in the sight of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And at the end, me and you, we are trying to please Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We are trying to please Allah and the Messenger of the Ahlul Bayt. We're not trying to please people, because pleasing people, no matter how hard you try, you will never be able to please them. So our aim should be always pleasing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And Allah requires from me that I maintain and protect my family in any way possible. Even to the extent that it says that if someone dies protecting his family, he dies as a shaheed. He gets a title of shahada because he is in defense, and he is trying to defend his family. So you can see that from just few words of Amir al-Mu'mineen, I did not mention many, how much he put emphasis on the right of the family and the right of the protection of the family. So inshallah, we'll leave it here and we will continue in episodes to come. So until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Salli ya Rabbi ala Taha al-Amin, rahmatin arsaltahu lil'alamin, wa ala ahil nabiyyi ajma'in, fa bihim narjuka ahsin khatmina.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.